Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone.
That's easy for you to say
today. Good afternoon, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Hoffman.
Don't call me that.
Oh, it was you.
You! You took away my pail!
It was my pail!
No, it wasn't. It was my favorite toy of all time, and you stole it, and you kicked it, and you put a dent in it!
You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn.
What all four of us could play? It's just oodles of fun.
You're right! Huh? You won't play charades? Oh, I love it. Mom, remember when we was kids, you used to play charades with us all the time?
I'd rather play Parcheesi, you.
Top of that, you're fine, I have parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on. There's no people like no people. They smile when they are low.
Mrs. Higgins.
Hello?
Hello? Don't press that button.
Hello?
Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold.
New Jersey, by taxi, I made a mad race. I pushed through the crowd till we stood face to face. I grabbed for his sleeve, but I got his briefcase. I believed it was something belonging to John Foster's daughter.
It's so nice of you all to come visit me here in prison.
With good behavior, I should be out in, 7 years.
Then you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show.
Don't panic.
I know. I thought I left you back there.
Oh, perish the thought, Miss Grip. I am going to be with you for 24 hours. 23 hours and 31 minutes, to be exact. My dear Miss Grep, I am here to change your life.
Let's go on with the
open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. Next will be Talking Twilight Zone.
Excellent opening, Robert. Really, really good. I like that. Very, very good. Oh, wow. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. Ibida, Ibida, Ibida. Since I screwed up that first part.
It's going to be that kind of show today, folks.
Yeah, I think it is. Speaking of clutches, yeah. Well, this one is really an interesting episode, and you know, I'm glad everybody's here. I'm glad we have a couple of new people here today. You know, it's the second from the last episode of season three, so I think it's going to be kind of fun, if nothing else. So I'm going to turn. I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
Okay, here we go.
This one I typed up, but I can describe it to you. It's a little girl. She wrote, "I have never missed one of your shows or your movies. I love everything you do. You're the funniest person alive. Your show is the greatest. I have pictures of you all over my room. I even have a life-size poster of you on my closet door. Every night before I go to bed, I say, good night, Carol. I love you. When I wake up, you're the first one I say good morning to. I thought it would be nice if you had a picture of me. So I'm enclosing a snapshot of me in front of my house. And on the back of the snapshot, swear to God, it said, to my favorite person of all time, Lucille Ball.
Oh.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Submitted for your approval, the case of one Miss Agnes Grepp, put on earth with two left feet, an overabundance of thumbs, and a propensity for falling down manholes. In a moment, she will be up to her jaw in miracles, wrought by apprentice angel Harmon Cavender, intent on winning his wings. And though it's a fact that both of them should have stood in bed, they will tempt all the fates by moving into the cold, gray dawn of the Twilight Zone.
Cold, gray dawn of the Twilight Zone. Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, this one's called Cavender is Coming. Yeah, it's about a woman named Agnes Grepp. She's an unemployed klutz who's behind on rent and down on her luck, so she gets help from Cavender, her guardian angel. And he has to make Agnes happier than she is within 24 hours in order to earn his wings. And at one point, Cavender tries to change the bus that he and Agnes are riding on. He tries to change it into a convertible with a chauffeur. However, he goofs up on that. He goofs up twice, actually. So he decides to turn it back into a bus, and that causes the bus driver to resign by leaping out the window. And so then Cavender provides riches and friends and a luxurious apartment and active social life and all these things for Agnes. And while it's a very dazzling, spectacular run, Agnes realizes she's happier with her normal life. Despite all of its shortcomings, she's happier the way she was. So Cavender, he reluctantly restores everything to the way it was, and he returns to heaven. But to his surprise, he earns the head angel's approval. Upon seeing Agnes's happiness, however, the head angel determines that before Cavender can earn his wings, he's got to help other deserving subjects down on Earth. So he doesn't quite earn the wings, but he's going to get there eventually. You know, he's just got to help other people. And those will be his assignments for future evaluation. And the head angel looks down and he says, in a strange way, I feel sorry for them. Well,
Michael Landon.
Yeah, Michael Landon.
Exactly.
Now that was a cool angel. Well, I feel sorry for them too. I feel sorry for us having to watch this episode. Well, look at it this way. Let me see. How many lame attempts at humor have Twilight Zones had to suffer through so far? I mean, let's recap. From the first season, viewers only had to endure one comedic attempt, and that was pathetic. That was Mr. Beavis, which, of course, if you think about it, this is the rehash of Mr. Beavis. Some people, they consider The Chaser to be a humorous episode as well, and I kind of do too. But it was bad. It had some lame jokes in it, but it's not quite as bad as Beavis. So therefore, season one was fairly free of the chuckle factor. But we now come to season two. Okay. Now, again, not a lot of comedies thrown into that season. We got two horrible ones. We got Mr. Dingle the Strong and The Mind of the Matter. And that was bad enough. However, I actually found that one with A Thing About Machines. The one with Finchley. Yeah, I thought that was funny, even though I don't think it was supposed to be funny, but I found that to be kind of a comedy type of thing. And, of course, we have Night of the Meek, which is a lighthearted holiday offering from Rob. And the cute lighthearted ones are almost as bad as the comedies, but they're the lesser of the two evils. Now, then again, we have season three. And the Twilight Zone fans are in for more comedic episodes than they could ever want in season three. There are five unfortunate attempts at laughter in that season. We have Once Upon a Time, Showdown with Rance McGrew, The Fugitive, Hocus Pocus and Frisbee, and, of course, our current episode here, Cavender is Coming. Every one of them makes me cringe. Horrible, horrible stories that absolutely do not belong in the Twilight Zone series. We also have the cute and sweet I Sing the Body Electric. I kind of like that episode. I did, but and it wasn't meant to be funny. It was one of those lighthearted, sweetie episodes, but, you know, it just doesn't belong in the series either, even though I liked it, it doesn't belong here. So after so many bad episodes with the comedies in this season, it's just amazing the series lasted another two seasons, and I'm glad it did. I love The Twilight Zone, but it's still amazing that after all those stupid comedies that, you know, it managed to survive. And Cavendish is Coming is not only pathetic because it's so bad, but more so because it's simply a remake by Rod of Mr. Bemis with a woman in the lead. Why did he do it? Why would he even consider doing it? The critics certainly were not kind to the Bemis episode. They panned it. They ripped it apart. This one was just awful, if not worse. So, I don't know. I mean, I love Carol Burnett. I enjoy watching Jesse White, but I hated this episode, and I hated seeing them in it. I mean, he even gave Carol's character that the terrible name of Agnes Grep. Come on. I mean, that's as bad as Luther Dingle. Okay, you know, so you got the same, yeah, I mean, really, Luther Dingle. But you got the same story as Beavis, but you got Grep instead. And she's a ditzy broad. She has nothing but bad luck, but she's happy with her life. So the guardian angel and his heavenly boss think money and high society will make her happier, but wrong. She hates it. She wants to be the way she was. The cavernier puts her back the way she was, and all is right with the world again. So please, spare me this crap. I mean, The Twilight Zone has no business trying to be funny. All of the attempts, they fall flat on their ugly faces. This series is supposed to be scary, mysterious, suspenseful, intriguing. It's not supposed to be funny. It's supposed to invoke shock and terror, not laughs. The only interesting thing about this whole episode was the depiction of heaven, complete with a door on a cloud. I like that. You actually had a door that you could walk through on a cloud. That's very nice. Well, I didn't need a door on a cloud, but I thought that was kind of cool. You know. But
I guess with that, you don't need walls around, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a door with no walls, just a door that you walk in. I thought that was kind of cool how they did that. But Cavendish's boss, now, he was played by Howard Smith. And I like Howard Smith, but he had a much better role as Bart Williams' boss in season one's A Stop at Willoughby. Push. Williams is a push business. That he was much better in that. But, and then, of course, John Fiedler. I love John Fiedler, terrific guy, but, you know, nice actor, funny in his own way, but his talents were wasted in this episode. He was the other angel, and he was in season two's Night of the Meek as well. And Jesse White, well, he had the great misfortune of being cast in this episode as well as the other travesty from this season titled Once Upon a Time. The poor guy, he got stuck in two crappy comedy episodes. I don't know. Look, I hate to remind people of this, but the torture isn't over yet. Two of the absolute worst comedic episodes are coming up in season four. Yes, two of the worst efforts ever. The tragedy of that is the fact that they're an hour long. Oh, my God. You know, that's really sad, the thing. But and now season five actually has more dud episodes than humorous ones. But I just keep reminding myself that there are so many classic and wonderful episodes, and that helps to ease some of the pain of the... yeah. Well, Cavendish's Coming is just a stupid, silly, awful episode. It's sad to even think that the considerable talents of Carol Burnett and Jesse White couldn't save it. But why are there comedies in the series at all? Why did Rod have to do it? I don't know. Only he knows that, and sadly, he ain't around to tell us anymore. So I'm giving it a zero because I just really thought it was terrible. And, I have a life-size poster of Robert hanging. Guru said he has a life-size poster of Robert hanging over here. Bed. Robert, you know Guru?
This is what I like about Gurus. He's taking him for Bear Fan Ron. So.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Guru.
You know
for
Guru. Okay.
Coming in for Ron. I do appreciate that.
All right. Awesome. Okay, Guru. That's cool. All right. Well, Robert, I give it a zero, and I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Give me the horror of reviewing this one. My goodness.
Oh, God.
Okay. Only thing that
remember, it gets worse later on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's be factual about this, and Probably Bobby would mention this after me about basically you could tell that they were trying to set this up for a pilot for a show or a spinoff, and pretty much in the vein of Buffy and Angel and other shows where they usually try to spin off a character from one of those shows. They tried to do this with this. Evidently, it didn't work because they pick a script that was just poorly received in season one that they try to redo it with, It's a Wonderful Life thrown in with it. And that seems to be the weirdest thing about this one and then the next one afterwards, which finishes up season three, is just let's throw in the Wonderful Life aspect into some of these episodes. And,
They were trailing in
parts of It's a Wonderful Life. Now,
No. You said that they were trying to make something out of this, a spinoff. What's a spinoff in 1960? There is no such thing.
Yeah, well, he was actually going to take this episode and turn it into a series.
Okay, well, it's not a spinoff.
Well,
it would have been the first spinoff.
I guess.
Yeah, it can't be a spinoff unless there's something to spin off of.
Well,
this comes
I guess.
Out, this comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, this is like, what would you call it, Robert? It would be like a...
A new series from the anthology that Twilight Zone was.
Yeah, all right, a series idea. Right, a series
idea. It's a
idea
pilot.
From...
It was meant to be a pilot, that's all.
There you go. All right, pilot. All right, Robert, a pilot. We're settled on a pilot.
Okay. I'm glad we got a majority of agreement on that there, but anyway... What I'm trying to say is they probably the executives there at CBS were determining how to spin it off, decided to probably pull out the script. Now, I'm just conjecturing, Rick Wall. I'm not for sure because I know you're the producer and you probably know how situations like this are set up. I'm just guessing that they decided to go ahead and dust off one of his scripts, asked to do a rewrite on it, and... then they decided to, and my understanding is they did add a laugh track to this, but in their wisement of syndication and DVD releases, they took the laugh track off. So,
which shows that they knew it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
Because they had to tell people to laugh and when to laugh.
Yeah, it's just... You know, I could just see the board meeting going on there on trying to do something like this. And the way that the story ends, it sets up for the continuation of other plights with this angel, this, you know, wacky angel that, you know, going to be sent down to, you know, heaven to help other people, you know, change their lives and make it better. Hence, Highway to Heaven years later down the road with Michael Landon. Or Touched by an Angel with, you know, the actors in that one. But anyway, like I said again, it's just not that good. It's just a rehash and retread of a script that was used and wasn't successful in season one. I don't know if it would have been even any better with a different script that they would pull out. Because... Just the whole idea, and even the one scene where we go to the party, and she's there, and you can tell Agnes is not a party mixer, so to say. She's a lone type person, pretty much like Vebus was. You know, he liked to play around with the kids and stuff like that. But for the most part, he kept to himself, and in the same with. With Agnes. In other words, she was an introvert. She didn't go out and mix with other people. I mean, you have these, people's mouths or lips or whatever you call it going around her head. And I thought that just kind of threw me off when they did that. Also, where, I know the economy back then was pretty good, but you never made a lot of money neither. Probably, what, 50 cents? Dollar an hour. I don't know what it was during that era, but $23,000. Why not a million? You really actually can secure yourself at $23,000.
Well, doesn't that seem weird? I mean, $23,000, even for 1962, that was how could that be considered rich?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
You were considered a really wealthy person with $23,000.
You could buy a house for $13,000.
Well, I know, but was that really considered terribly wealthy?
Yes.
No kidding, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Don't forget, it was only 30 years after the Depression.
Well,
not
that's
even
true.
20 years after the Depression.
Well, that's and you're true. Coming out of the war, too, so.
And they're coming out of the war, too, yep.
But it just, I guess, I know what you're saying. I agree with you.
Free lunches. Beer was 75 cents if it was that expensive.
Burger
that's
probably
true.
10 cents or something, yeah.
Yeah, you get a loaf of bread for a nickel or 3 cents, yeah. Well, that's true, but it just still doesn't seem like terribly wealthy, $23,000. But I guess back then it was. Strange. Oh, okay. I guess I'll go along with that.
Yeah. You know, if we had to pick Angels out of this and It's a Wonderful Life, I like Clarence a lot better than
me too.
Cavender any day, to be honest about it. Jesse White, I like Jesse White. I remember the Maytag repairman commercial.
Yeah.
When he passed away, Gordon Jump took over for him. But
it was never the same. Never quite the same.
No, it wasn't. But I do remember those old Maytag commercials.
You remember where Gordon Jump went from there, don't you?
WKRP in Cincinnati.
But one interesting fact, I don't know true or not, but it was mentioned that Donald Douglas did make an appearance in this episode, but as an extra. You remember her? She was in Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah. Did you see her? I still never picked her out.
Unless she was one of the girls that was in line or, you know, when the manager was talking to him in the theater.
Yeah,
unless
I
she was
her.
A background.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless she was a background extra, I'm not for sure. But all in all, it's a very silly and lackluster episode. And I agree with you. It really didn't have no place in the series. I enjoy Carol Burnett and some of the clips I played. That one where she was singing that song at the beginning, opening there, was when she was on the Gary Moore show. She was on the Gary Moore show for a long time as well, too.
Yeah, she was. Yeah. Oh, she's fabulous. I mean, one of the funniest comedians ever. But this was really... Well, she was just starting out, too, when this came out, so...
Yeah. Pretty much, but I give it a 1 out of 5.
Oh, you're really being generous.
Well, just for Carol Burnett, I like her
as
an actress and a comedian actress as well. And actually, she's a pretty good singer.
She actually is. You know, people always made fun of her, but she did that on purpose, those things that she did, but she actually could sing.
You know what was funny and kind of not related to this is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World was on. And I was watching the scene where Ethel Merman's character gets mad and has Terry, you know, that one guy pull over the car. And Jack Benny drives by and he asks if he needs any help. So. Wow.
What a great movie.
Yeah. But anyway, passing on over to the man, the legend, Bobby Neer. Hey, all right. There he is. Now, looking forward to this. Go on. Let me get a drink here.
I just wanted you to know that while Robert was speaking, they ran the Preakness on TV. And the favorite finished way out of the money. So if you bet on him, you're out of luck. Or finished like sixth or seventh or something. I don't know. He completely ran out of gas. Wasn't even close. So, horse named Oxbow won. So if you bet on him, you made some money today. No Triple Crown winner this year. Mm. Now, onto something much more important than that. And I, you know, there's a real lesson to be learned here in this episode. And that is that no matter how talented somebody may be or how funny they may be, you can't just stick them in something and expect something to come of it. By that I mean that in his review on the board at our group, Robert compared Carol Burnett, put her right behind Lucille Ball, and I certainly do agree with that. I think they're certainly the two funniest women of the past 60 years. But there's a big difference between them. That is that Lucy, for all of her talent, I Love Lucy was a funny show. There were simply funny episodes week after week after week. And they knew how to put her in funny situations where she would make the most of it, and she did. And that's why it worked so well. Now, here you've got somebody almost as talented as Lucy was, and she was only 29 years old, as has been pointed out already, when she was in this. And they stick her in this absolutely hideously unfunny story. It's a tragedy, really. And you expect her to be funny because she mugs for the camera or she knows how to fall, things like that. That's not good enough. You have to have a funny story. And the thing is, they just don't have one. Carol Burnett, by the way, turned 80 years old a couple of weeks ago, and she was on TV. I believe she was either on Letterman or Leno. I don't remember which one it was.
She's 80 now?
Yeah, she just turned 80.
Oh, my God, I thought she was only about 75. Oh, goodness.
Not really. And she looks really good, and she's got her faculties about her. And I watched it. I was kind of disappointed because she didn't mention this episode. I was kind of disappointed in that. I can't imagine why she didn't mention it. And, you know, her career survived this. And it's a good thing. If you're going to be in anything this bad, you better be in it early in your career, not later. Because if you're in it later, people say, well, she's washed up. She's finished. Her career is nowhere. She would appear in crap like this. So if you're going to do this on the way up, best get it out of the way early. But she was too talented to let an episode like this ruin her career. But it is absolutely dreadful. And I you know, I don't know whether I can talk again about the business with the Twilight Zone trying to be funny. It just is, you know, I don't know. I've looked all around the web to see whether anybody has any insight on the why he insisted on doing this, whether he thought that the Twilight Zone would be better if it went into comedy every now and then, or he just aspired to be funny, which he certainly was not. But for all of his brilliance and all of his genius, he just went down the wrong road when he went to these comedy episodes. They just simply don't work. Not only because they don't fit in the Twilight Zone, which they don't, but because they just are bad. They're just not funny. Put something funny in there, and even though I might sit here and say, ah, you know what, I don't go here to see something funny, it might have been bearable, but the stories, one after another, are awful. The ones that Lynn mentioned and the ones coming up later are just horrible. And this is just another one of them. And I know I say this every show, but it's really depressing to me because this is the 12th consecutive episode that we have reviewed since we had a classic episode. It's the 12th episode after To Serve Man. And even though some of them have been not so bad, there's really been nothing classic since then. 3 months worth of episodes only to get to this point. That's quite appalling. And, you know, I don't wonder why it is CBS wanted to cancel the series at the end of the third year. Maybe they saw what I see every week, which is that they've run out of ideas and things are not good. So it's just an embarrassment. It really is.
Well, they went with the C scripts on this, Bobby, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Now,
yeah.
The thing about it is everybody hates it. In our poll, I believe somewhere between 4 and 6 people gave it 0, which is unheard of. I'm usually the only one who does that. And the highest rating it got in our poll was 2. Somebody rated it average. Everybody else was 1.5, 1, and 0. And I don't know that there's another episode quite like that. So,
when did a 0 just now? So,
well, I'm saying, well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. But it's a rarity. I'm usually the one who ends down zeros. But the thing about it is that I went to the Internet Movie Databases, always do, and it got a very poor rating, something like
5.2 or something, which is very, very low over there. Most people disliked it, perhaps not as much as we do. And I thought to myself, there must be somebody somewhere in the world who really liked it. And I always say about the internet, if you look long enough and hard enough, you always find what you're looking for. And so I went to a website I've been to before called efilmcritic.com. And there's a man there who runs it. His name is Chris Parry, P-A-R-R-Y. And he does, I think he's done reviews of all the Twilight Zone episodes, if I'm not mistaken. And he also does movies and TV shows, a lot of things. It's a pretty extensive website. And I have gone there from time to time, and he writes well, and it's interesting to read what he has to say. So I wanted to see what he had to say about this episode, and I want to read just a few selected paragraphs out of his review of Cavender is Coming. I think you'll be quite surprised. This is what he had to say. If you look through the great paperback reference, The Twilight Zone Companion, you'll note that this episode is pretty much pounded by the author. He calls it terminally unfunny and says it should have been retitled Cadaver is Coming. He adds that Carol Burnett looks lost throughout and remarks that the writing is substandard. I heartily disagree in every respect, though if the episode fails to be as funny as it could have been, sole blame has to go to the director. Jokes that could have been funny, if not entirely original, are ruined by bad editing and lackluster pacing. Set pieces that should evoke uproarious laughs are weakened by bad camera angles and a lack of understanding for how comedy works. But Burnett is perfect. Her every word seems almost ad-libbed. Every expression is perfect. And the physical aspect of her comedy is good enough to think that it was written for her. To my way of thinking, it totally works. Oh, sure, there are slow patches in this episode, and the supporting casts are almost entirely terrible. Jesse White, best remembered as the always idle Maytag repairman over 20 years of TV commercials for the company, misses most of his marks and seems to have been still stuck in the vaudeville mindset when this episode was filmed. But all of that means nothing. Two qualities put this among the upper echelon of Twilight Zone episodes for me. One of them is a single moment when the driver of a bus stops his vehicle, having seen it just turned into a horse-drawn wagon, and then a convertible, then back to a bus again. He then turns to his passengers and says, "When the supervisor comes to claim this bus, tell him I quit." He then puts his hat down and, in a fit of freakout, dives through the driver's side window. Laugh? I nearly killed myself. Forget the corny effects and weak production values. Get past the pauses where punchlines should be and side characters so weak they break in a decent breeze. Cavender is Coming is where comedy meets the Twilight Zone and shows it a thing or two, and I, for one, loved it. That's the end of his review. And I would say he's right about one thing. I nearly killed myself, too, because I didn't think this was ever going to end. He actually loved this episode. I love the way he says, comedy meets the Twilight Zone and shows it a thing or two. Exactly what episode, what comedy episode in this series did ever showed how comedy should be done?
No,
I mean, I wish this guy was on this show. I wish he was on this show right now. I'd love to talk to him. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. That's why we're here in the first place. But it is really amazing to read a review like that. And he's dead serious. I mean, he laughed. He almost fell over laughing over that scene in the bus. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. So it's just awful. It's about as awful as that awful Buster Keaton silent one. What was that called?
Once upon a time. Jesse White. That was the other one Jesse White was in.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time. Yeah, I mean, I just hated
Jesse
that.
Jesse got screwed twice.
Yeah, how about that? I just hated that, and this is just, you know, you just sit here and you just shrug your shoulders. You just don't know what they're trying to accomplish. I just don't know. This is so bad. Even if Lucy had been in it, she couldn't have improved in any, because you've got to have something funny, and that's the difference. Carol Burnett went on to do her variety show, which I loved, And they did funny skits on there. There was funny stuff on there to do. You just can't plop somebody down in the middle of nowhere and say, okay, be funny. Give her something to do. Give her jokes. Give her something. Don't just sit her there and let her die. But, of course, I gave it a zero. It probably deserves less than that. It's just absolutely agonizing, and it really is, especially at the end of a season. I mean, I know it's not the last episode, but it's so close to the last episode. If you must do this, bury it somewhere early on, you know, just write it off and just, but don't put it there. I can't find anything on the web, but I keep being suspicious about why Rod Serling would write this or even let it go the way he did, and whether or not he made some sort of deal with CBS because they did want to cancel the series.
Well, the crazy thing is that he did Beavis, and this is just a rehash of Beavis.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, the critics began Beavis.
Yeah, but why even do that?
I don't know.
I keep wondering if they wanted, you know, somehow to do a pilot, and he may have agreed to it because they agreed to bring back the series an hour long, unfortunately. And because I don't understand why a man that smart and that talented would do a story like this. Not only that, he would write it, but that he wouldn't look at it and say, you know what, right, this is going to ruin my reputation. So there you go. It's a zero. One person likes it, which in itself is a miracle. All right, Lynn.
Okay, Rick.
All right. Rod. When will you learn you cannot do comedy?
Yeah.
Even though I liked a couple of them.
Which ones were those?
The one you just mentioned.
Oh, you like the one with Buster Keaton?
You like the silent one? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And I kind of like the what was the storyteller guy?
Storytellers.
You know,
that's not Hocus Pocus and Frisbee.
Yes, Hocus
Pocus. Oh, Hocus! You like that one, really? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But as in general, Rod, please, you should have given up.
I remember a long time ago you said, Rick, Rod, get some comedy writers.
Yeah, exactly. Rod, get some comedy writers, please.
That's true.
You know, if you're going to attempt a comedy, have somebody else do it. Don't you do it.
Yeah.
Now, to answer Guru's question about the sponsors wanting comedy. As I've said a number of times to people here, back then, the producer is God. Not the network, not CBS, not like today. Well, back then, the sponsors had a little more power than the studios did, but not that much, because the producer would make the show, sell it to the network, and then the networks would get the sponsors, or the sponsors would be, you know, giving money to the networks already.
But then do you have people that would stick their hands in there or fingers like censors?
That they could not do it because the show was already shot.
Hmm.
Okay? No network person could say, well, you know what, change this. No. The producer would say, go fuck yourself. Okay? No.
Is it too much to ask that the producer have some taste?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the problem. I mean, I don't think half the time they even realized how bad it was.
I think they were looking at comedy scripts and thought that this was the softest one that, you know, could get by if they did a pilot.
Yeah.
They. You mean Rod.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, evidently, he didn't come up with the idea. CBS came up with the idea.
Of making a comedy off of it? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general, as I said, networks and sponsor, well, again, like I said, sponsors had a little more power than the network back then, but usually the network bought the show, however many episodes the season was, 23 or whatever episodes from the producer, already in the can, and had nobody in the network had much say at all in the production of the show.
Well, they seem to studio when they canceled the show. Got power with that.
Yeah, that's about the only power they had. All right, like I said, they couldn't come in and say, you know what? Oh, you're going to hire Burgess Meredith? No, we want you to hire so and so for such and such a part. They couldn't do that like they could today.
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the people that he used over and over again, now from what I understand,
a lot of them were his friends.
Yeah, friends. And he did have some say in that, I think. I think he was
able to
have a little pull. And, you know, he loved Burgess Meredith. He liked William Shatner. He liked Barney Phillips, you know, guys like that. And he said, you know, I want to use these guys. So he did have some say in that, I think.
Well, Sinatra was the same way when he would do movies and invite his friends, Sammy Davis and all of them, to do movies with
him. And he had the say in that, yeah. Yeah. So that's true, Rick. He did have say in that.
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, you know, Rod, why didn't you go to Mel or somebody?
Mel Brooks.
Oh, that would have been brilliant. Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks, oh my God.
and ask them for a script.
They would have done a spinoff on that, Twilight Zone Comedy Night.
Yeah.
Baseball, the Twilight Zone episode.
This is going to be my first zero on an episode.
Wow.
And it's a zero.
All right. Let's have the applause, Robert.
Okay, we'll get the applause going. See, you put him to sleep. All right.
Rick's first zero. Hi, Jeff. Oh, that's okay. Glad you're here. We have Jeff here. Lou, what do you think of this episode?
You know, I probably liked it a little bit more than you guys. But then again,
really?
I haven't really been... Well, I mean, you know, I haven't been that deep into the Twilight Zone, so I wasn't really familiar with, like, those season one episodes that you guys were talking about.
Right.
You know, I would give it a 1.5 stars. It wasn't that good an episode. I liked the first act. I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, I wasn't too put off by the slapstick humor, you know, jumping through the window. And they did have a nice little running gag with Cavender being something of an alcoholic, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
And there was that one small scene where he starts explaining why he's down there. Then he, you know, she offers him a drink and he goes, no, no, no. And then he starts going into the speech about what he's there for. But then he suddenly pauses and goes like, yep, bourbon, you know, something like that. And I thought that was kind of funny. For me, where it fails is just basically the story structure. I mean, it's, you know, Carol Burnett's not really learning a lesson. It was never her choice to be put into this life. She was happy in her life. It's Cavender who thought that maybe she'd be better with all the, you know, all the money and all the fame and all the, and, you know, the idea.
Yeah,
of
she never asked to change her life.
Yeah,
exactly.
So there's no real, I mean, if anything, Cavender learns that maybe that's not the solution, but... you know, for me, that's where it kind of fails. You know, there's no real growth for Carol Burnett's character. And Cavender's character is kind of just a little bit just not really that wise as to how things are supposed to work.
Right.
But, yeah, so that's where it falls apart from me. Because, yeah, after that first act, you're right, it's not really that funny. They go through this whole surreal montage sequence at the party where you see that she's not happy. And, you know, it just gets a little too predictable and a little too just flat at that point.
Yeah, because you know it's going to kind of end up like Mr. Beavis, where it's just going to, he's just going to turn it back right into her old life.
Yeah. You know, my question is, I was kind of impressed with the production values of this episode. I mean, it looked like there were a lot of external shots. You know, they had a bus sequence, they had a horse carriage. Then, you know, there was a lot of, it seemed like there was a lot more...
Yeah, they might have spent a little more money on this because they had that movie theater scene. and things like that, a little more location. Yeah, so they may have spent more money on that.
There could be a possibility that this was being set up as for kind of a pilot episode. I'm not sure why this episode. In other episodes, it's kind of, they're kind of location-based, or, you know, it's like one set.
Well, a lot of episodes, they use the same set that they've used. I think Mr. Dingle, and I've seen The Body Electric, and there's one called Nice Stopover in a Quiet Town. Those episodes, they all use the same lot. Same MGM lot and the same set. So this one may have been a different, because they might have been setting that up for another series.
Well, Lou, you brought up a good point, especially when you were talking about in Tex here, Happy Days, and that was they took an episode to set up Ron Williams' Mork for the Mork and Mindy. And, you know, there's been lots of TV shows that's done this. A good example is Mary Tyler Moore. Mary Tyler Moore, you get Phyllis from that, you get Rhoda from that, and you get Lou Grant.
Yeah.
After Mary Tyler Moore ended, Ed Asner went on and did Lou Grant. So, yeah.
Right, and then you had
comedy
and
drama,
Right, you had All in the Family, and then you had the Jeffersons.
Which was Maude, yeah.
Which ended up being Maude, and also ended up being, didn't Florence, the maid, end up getting
good
her own series?
Yeah,
Good Times, and then... there was also the one with Florence the Maid.
Oh, yes, there was. That's right.
Yeah, they had a bunch of spinoffs from that.
Yeah.
Oh, and Gloria. Gloria had a show. Yeah, called Gloria.
That was a one-season show. Yeah, she got divorced from Mike.
Yeah, one-season show. Yeah, that was horrible.
Single mom.
Boy, they really got their money's worth out of that one.
I guess the last thing I'd like to say is nobody mentioned Mrs. Krebs. From Bewitched, she had a little cameo in there too.
Oh, really?
Just
oh,
before Larry
came,
she was
upstairs in the neighbor. In the apartment building.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cute when I saw her.
Alice Kravitz or something.
Yeah, I kept thinking, Mrs. Kravitz, you're right.
Right.
I kept thinking the Bewitched producers were like watching The Twilight Zone at this time, and they decided to get Larry Tate and Mrs. Kravitz from watching these episodes.
Yeah, I always remember her from Bewitched. Abner!
Yeah.
that's
and even
right,
from the Carol Burnett show years down the road, you get Mama's Family too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with Vicki Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, cool. So we got a 1.5. We got a bunch of zeros, and you gave it what, Robert?
I gave it a 1. Yeah.
A 1, a 1.5, and 2 zeros, and Guru 7 gave it an 8. Yeah, Guru 71 gave it an 8. Just to be difficult. Oh, he's so bad. This would be difficult. He gave it to me. So, I think we're sort of in agreement that this was not a great episode. However, 2 weeks from now, on June 1st, we do have one of my favorites, one that I like very much.
Same here.
The Changing of the Guard. Changing of the Guard with Donald Pleasance. And I'm looking forward to actually talking about that one because I enjoy it. And it is the last episode of season 3. So I am looking forward to that one. That will be here.
Plot
weeks.
Points a little bit.
Was that?
What were the plot points a little bit of the episode? I don't remember it. At least
what,
not by title.
The guard? Changing the Guard, the one with the teacher.
Oh, right.
He plays the teacher.
Just think
of
it, The Wonderful Life, and Clarence deciding to wish Jimmy Stewart's wish about not being alive and all that. It's the suicide connection.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance was terrific in that anyway. Oh, hi, Sonny. Look, he's here. Sonny's here. Hi, Sonny.
Well, you just brightened this show up already, Sonny.
So Changing the Guard, and that'll be in 2 weeks. Oh, Sonny, we're just about ready to wrap up the show, but I'm just glad you showed up anyway for the end, and we're talking about our next show. What? Did Bobby say something? Did we lose Bobby?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Bobby, we lost you. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't bring that in. Bobby, we lost you. No. Okay, you said the show's over.
Pretty much. I don't blame him.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway.
Bobby Neer, everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
Sonny, yes, you do get a prize for being the last one in tonight. Yes. But 2 weeks from now, we're going to be doing Changing the Guard. Sonny, we're going to be doing Changing the Guard in 2 weeks on June 1st. And I hope you'll be here. Get here on time.
You're going to college, so get there on time.
Yeah, you're
going to
be in college then. So get there on time for that one. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so everybody, thank you all for coming. And I really, love talking about this episode because it really was so bad that it was actually fun.
You want to hear something really bad?
What?
A seal walks into a club. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
How do you keep a bunch of idiots in suspense?
How?
Put them in animation.
I'll tell you in 2 weeks.
All right, Rick Wolver, everybody. Thank you, Rick.
Man walks into a bar with a parrot on his head. Guess what the parrot says? Exactly. All right. Okay, everybody. See you in 2 weeks, and I hope everybody will be here for that, and that'll be Changing the Guard, and have a wonderful rest of the weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And one last thing from Carol as we bid you all farewell.
Wonderful.
Goodbye, everybody.
I'm so glad we had this time together, just to have a laugh or sing a song. Since we just get started, and before you know it, comes the time we have to say so. The time you put aside for dreaming, and a time for things you have to do, but the time I like the best is any evening I can spend a moment here. The time comes and I'm feeling lonely, and I'm feeling oh so blue. I just sit back and think of you and the happiness still. Cause it makes me feel that I belong.
La la la.
Seems we just get
started. Then
and before you know it, guess
all
the
time we have to say
so
long.